Did you like my sunglasses, Snake?
What?
What's your favorite Liquid line?
What?
Liquid Snake.
When did he say that?
At the end, remember? Because he pretends to be Miller? And like, it's like right at the end when he like, it's after you beat Rex and you're like, he's like standing above you shirtless and you're tied up, he's gonna fist butt you. He's like, did you like my glasses?
I remember that one. That's pretty funny.
It's funny.
I think my favorite Liquid is, but I live on through this arm!
Oh yeah, Metal Gear Solid 2. I'm surprised you can't do a better Liquid.
I'm a little disappointed.
Hang
on, let me try. I don't give me a line.
It wasn't English enough. I don't know. Just do my sunglasses. The glasses one. Did you like my sunglasses?
I don't know that line though. I can't mimic it. Anyone can mimic.
I don't know. Shit. What else does he say?
He said
a lot of things about like genes and nanos.
You got all the recessive genes, but you got all the dominant genes, but I got the recessive one. I don't know.
You're a bit too like northern English, I think.
Yeah.
You can't do it. This is why you can't do it.
I need to immerse myself in the character.
Boo. You stink. Get him out of here.
Brother!
Brother! There you go. Just scream brother.
Brother!
Until you get it. Welcome to the Explain Barrel podcast on September 3rd, 2015.
There you go. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. It's like, what month? It's a new month. Oh, no. I'm joined by my brother, Atch Guy, and this is our Metal Gear episode. So if you didn't listen last week to celebrate our 80th anniversary, we're kind of switching things up. We're going kind of one topic per show, and at the end, like a little cleaning house. Is there anything else notable we want to talk about?
It's called the Special Zone.
The Special Zone. That's right. My bad. I forgot that we're very adamant about the name now.
Like, I like the Special Zone.
Yeah, I just threw that out there, and you grabbed onto that thing
all the way to the bank.
You are not letting go. Okay. So obviously, Metal Gear Solid 5 came out. I think we should start with like our first impressions of that game before we kind of go into like maybe some more of the series overall. And obviously, this is a non-spoilerly.
I'm not far enough to spoil anything. Yet,
but
don't
even
worry.
Still, like, I'm not going to say anything about even like the prologue or what that. Except we can talk about it's an interesting prologue. I've seen kind of mixed reactions. I've seen some people love it and some people think it's kind of long.
Well, it depends how anxious you are to jump into the game. I guess it's. For being gameplay, it's very linear and almost non-interactive in some
ways. You're right. It's not. It finally gets to a point where you can die. It's almost jarring.
Yeah. Well, like, so a lot of this was shown in the original look at the game where Snake, like, wakes up from the coma.
I think that might be the thing that kind of hurts it, too, is that this is one of the few things I've already seen of the game.
Yeah, and, well, like, I guess, like, when I watched that original video where, like, Snake's originally, like, crawling out of the original room he starts in, and he's like, trying to hold himself up on stuff and it's falling out from under him. I guess in my head I assumed that was like a little more dynamic, but it's literally like
you're holding forward.
Push forward to begin the animation cycle that we've created.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But I think that's just all it is like you're moving very slowly.
Right.
Nothing's happening. A few things start happening. So, like, it's a slow burn. It's very cool. Like, there's some story stuff happening.
Yeah, and it's like a pretty intense section.
Oh, yeah. It's very Murphy's Law.
Yeah, it manages to be violent in a way that's not like, look how cool the violence is, but like to actually be kind of disturbing.
Well, it's
scary.
A bunch of like innocent nurses in a hospital getting murdered.
But, yeah, I like the prologue, and I thought there was some cool things, and like a lot of it's like, what the heck is going on here, and we'll probably find out.
Yeah.
Maybe. You never can know with a Metal Gear game. And it does some light tutorialing, which I like. That's not over the top. With it, it's just like, this is the first time you're going to do something, you can push this button to learn more about how to do it if you want to. But,
Which confused me at first. I thought it was telling me that hitting the touchpad was what was going to perform that action.
Yes, me too.
And I'm like, why am I in the pause menu? And I didn't see that thing at the bottom that was trying to tell me stuff.
Oh, I'm pushing the touchpad to get into cover, I guess.
Yeah, and then I was like, why is the screen paused? And why am I getting shot by this helicopter now?
In fact, the game uses the touchpad button.
It's used as a start button.
But twice. I wonder what the Xbox One does. Because the Xbox One has one more menu button.
Yeah, because they have the screenshot button.
Yeah.
So that's all it's doing.
But there's two menu buttons that Xbox One doesn't have.
What does pushing option in the game do now? I can't remember.
Yeah, what does that do?
Does it do anything?
I'm not sure. Maybe it just also pauses it?
I don't know.
All right, then.
Because you have your iDroid menu, and then you have, like, the game menu.
Right, so... So, another thing before we get into the extra game, I think the game looks fantastic.
Oh, this is like gorgeous. I think 60 frames per second.
I think it's the best looking current gen game yet.
I put it up there with Batman between the two.
I don't know. Was Batman 60 frames?
No, it's not 60 frames.
No, that's then it's not close.
But I think Batman has a little more detail, especially in like the characters.
I don't know if it has more detail. I disagree. I don't know. The detail in this is pretty incredible, I think. I think the animations are better. I think it seems more. I don't know if it was milliced or what, but it seems like characters are animated a bit, maybe more convincingly. I mean, Batman's almost more cartoony. It seems. I don't think it was mocapped in Batman. You know, I think
Batman's mocapped.
Batman was mocapped. That's kind of surprising.
Arkham Asylum is mocapped.
Really, that's surprising.
For the cutscenes, at least, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I don't know. I think this game looks better than Batman, and it's, you know, Batman has different challenges because it has a lot more crowds. I think.
Yeah, that's the advantage this game has. It's an open world game, but it doesn't have to be like. We have all these citizens in a city.
Right, it's not like
even Skyrim with the Radiant AI and everything. Like,
I think that's like why like Assassin's Creed and Unity have so many problems, because they're like, well, we're just going to really bump up how many people are in the crowds. And I was like, what do we do? So this doesn't really have that kind of problem. But no, I think the game looks fantastic.
I think the binocular system is really smart in the game.
Yeah, and it's almost kind of similar to what Far Cry does, if you played those recent ones.
I really haven't, is the funny thing.
Well, it's just that when you zoom in on an enemy who's patrolling, you kind of mark them. And so now they're always, like, marked in your field of view.
Yeah, and that's what's funny, is, like, it still feels like a Metal Gear game. I think that's owed a lot to the controls. Mm-hmm. But it is, like, this weird mix of, like, Far Cry, Assassin's Creed, and Skyrim in a lot of ways.
Right. It is funny how, really, from Metal Gear Solid, like, Metal Gear to Metal Gear Solid 3, they were all pretty similar in how they played in a lot of ways. 3 was maybe getting rid of some of it. But yeah, we've come kind of pretty far from that, and I think it all works out. I think it's neat, because it's like, you know, we're not playing the same game again. But no, I do like marking, because...
Well, you get to a base in the open world, you approach it from any angle, and you do. Like, you find a good perch that you won't be seen from, and you just start scoping out the place. You learn the layout, you learn enemy positions, very organically.
And it's cool, because, you know, sometimes maybe there won't be that high a point, so if you really want detailed analysis, you get to, like, go around all sides of the base. Mm-hmm. Do you want to bother with that? You want to just go in and take your chances? It's all pretty. And, you know, you can also find enemies, and you can interrogate them, and... They'll show you where like certain hidden items are and stuff.
I don't speak Russian yet, but
That's cool though too. Yeah, they all speak Russian, so you have to first capture an interpreter.
Yeah,
which is something I did. But so I was talking about like the meta game to it. I guess it's not meta game; it's like part of the game. Is the building the mother base, and this is straight from Peace Walker. This is a pretty similar thing here. And it's pretty similar. The one thing I like is you don't send people out on missions like you do in like Assassin's Creed or something. Even like World of Warcraft, the Warlords of Draenor. Stop looking at your new iWatch.
I'm sorry, I got a thing. I'm talking to my mother-in-law. She's talking about babies.
Oh, you're fine. You can stop looking at it for while we record the podcast. Shut up. All right, so basically the thing is that you can capture soldiers, and then they'll go back to Mother Base, and they'll go into like one of so many divisions that will do certain things. So one's like an intel gathering division. So the stronger that division is, the more automatic intel you'll get about enemy movements and where items might be located. One of them is R&D. So that's you can craft weapons. Yeah, instead of finding them on the field, most of the stuff they have to craft for you. And again, that depends on the materials you have, but also the level of your R&D.
And the funny thing is, this all actually reminds me of XCOM. There's like a lot of weird game influences here. I mean, not that I'm saying that's a bad thing. I think it does all really well.
Right. But no, it's fun. It kind of does add this neat mechanic of, you know, even when you're not on a mission, maybe you'll just want to go to this enemy base and go in and find some materials and recruit some soldiers.
Yeah.
And recruiting them is funny because you use the Fulton recovery thing.
Which I love the scream they do as they shoot into the air is always funny.
That's right, because you can recover, later you can recover even vehicles and stuff when you upgrade the Fulton. But right now you can recover like small animals. Mm-hmm. So if you like caught a sheep yet, it's pretty funny. Just like watch the sheep go.
What do you do with the sheep?
You just get points where you get some heroism points, actually.
Oh, you're saving the sheep from the oppressive Afghanis.
Yeah, right. Something interesting like that. I think the sort of like interweaving it with like the real world history and politics is interesting too. Mm-hmm. And yeah. a lot of that stuff they don't force on you. It's in the cassette tapes.
Yeah, the cassette tapes are kind of like the new codec.
Yeah,
in
right.
this game. Yeah, just story.
Yeah, and yeah, and I like them because it goes into like a lot of like the history of what's going on, and it goes into a lot of like the lore stuff also.
They're usually two separate things. Optional.
Right. Exactly. And it's like, you know, if you don't really care about that, you can. And that's kind of interesting. I think so much of like the usual Metal Gear talkiness is in those. Like, Metal Gear Solid 5 feels like a silent film.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland got an easy paycheck from this one, it seems like,
so far. Yeah, he's not doing a whole...
He did a few grunts and groans.
I mean, Snake was always kind of a silent character anyways. Most of his talking was in codec calls.
Right.
So it's not, like, totally bizarre.
Also, when did Kept You Waiting, Huh? become, like, a catchphrase?
I don't know. Didn't he say it in the reveal for Smash Brothers?
Yeah, and he did it in the opening of... Ground Zeroes.
Right.
And then, like, you save Master Miller, and I get your...
It is his catchphrase, though.
He's like, please say it. I've waited so long. And, like, you say, like, kept you waiting, huh? And it's like, oh.
When did... Yeah, when,
I don't know. I mean, it is. That? I just don't know.
I'm just trying to remember if he said it in 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, weird.
I don't know.
Interesting. But, yeah. What was I talking about, though? With the Fulton, yeah, the Fulton and the capturing things and all that.
Goats and sheep.
Goats and the sheep. Your heroism and all that. I don't know exactly what the heroism does yet, but you get, like, hero points. And that's kind of, like, your punishment for not playing it super stealthy is you lose hero points.
Right. Because mm-hmm. you could go guns blazing. More right. so than any other Metal Gear game ever made, probably.
Yeah, I think... Well, yeah. But, I mean, I don't.
I think ever, what's the fun in that?
I think it's a fun. I think it is also... Not easier, but better in a lot of ways.
I'll tell you, like, it's... They've done a good job. Like, this was always the complaint with 3. Because didn't 3... was it the original version of 3 didn't have the mini-map? And then they added it back for Integral?
Not Integral, Subsistence.
Whatever it's called, yeah.
I only played Subsistence.
There was something about 3 that people hated. Maybe it was
the map. It was the camera that people hated, okay. Not the map.
Nevertheless, like, I think the reason... The thing was, it was hard to know where enemies were.
Yeah, couldn't react. It's because of the camera.
Yeah. And
not the map.
What they've done now is between the marking of enemies, the way like you have that like 2 second slow down response window.
I love the
2 second
thing. Because it's actually kind of realistic too. Like there would be like a second where someone's surprised. So if you're close enough to somebody and they're alone, you can kind of just charge at them and they'll be so surprised they can't really react to it. And if there's two people, if you're pretty close, you can probably take both of them out before they can like call for help or something.
Yeah, you can like shoot the one, tackle the other.
Right.
Like you have options when you're spotted that don't immediately go to every enemy everywhere knows exactly where you are.
Right, exactly.
Which is also good because still sometimes like when you try to like just come up behind a guy and grab him or choke him or whatever, it's still a little clunky.
You think?
I mean, it's okay because even if he turns around and sees me, I could still grab him and do what I was going to do because nothing will happen. But, like, yeah, there's been times, like, I come up behind a guy, I want to grab him, and he just magically turns around and sees me. But, like I said, you just choke him out and it's no big deal. The only other issue I have with the game, you know, there's a lot of context-sensitive stuff, and still sometimes you don't quite know what's going to happen when you push that button. For example, I was trying to sneak into a building, and there's a window. I'm like, cool, I'm going to climb in this window. And Snake, like, just shatters the window. Oh, yeah. And may as well, like, blew off an air horn as he went inside. Oh, right. I'm like, oh, my God, shut up. So, like, I was like, I did not want to do that.
Now you learned an important lesson about windows in the game.
Yeah, don't do it. like, why would that be the thing? Just try to open it. It was unlocked the whole time, Snake.
But no, I do like just like the sort of pure. It's all very kind of like there's bases in this area and you're gonna infiltrate them and do separate things. So one like is like a rescue mission, and one time I had to like go set off some C4s in a place and destroy like some equipment and stuff like that. Like the one that was cool recently was like there's like a meeting between 3 generals. I had to like get rid of them, but it'd be better if I could like Fulton recovery them because they're.
Yeah, super skilled.
Generals, exactly.
Yeah, that's like the earliest mission. You're going after a commander. And same thing. You could take him out, but if you can extract him,
I like that the game sort of automatically puts them in like the place that they're best suited for. And you can move them around, especially once you open up more wings, which is a benefit.
Well, the game's remarkably good for a Metal Gear game at kind of letting it take care of itself.
Yeah.
In regards to that stuff in the audio cassettes. But like if you want to dig deeper, you can, but you really don't have to. Which I think is smart.
Right.
Because, you know, when you hear, like, reviews, like, we played for 40 hours, I haven't finished the game, but we had to get our review out. Like, you're like, ugh, like, what goes into this thing, you know? And if it was dragged down and all the kind of Metal Gear muckety muck, that I think it would have become really excruciating.
And it's the first Metal Gear game where you can actually go grinding, which I love. Because you can go grind for, you can grind for materials. Well, I always like looking at you know, a freaking list of items I can build and seeing what I need. Oh, I'll go get this stuff so I can build it. And, you know, you can make some cool stuff. Like I saw already, there's the tranquilizer sniper rifle. I'm like, oh, I need that thing. That was always a sweet weapon in three.
Yeah, gots to have that.
That'll be so nice.
It might be good for taking out guys in high patrol towers.
Exactly.
Because that was another thing I got confused on. There's still times you don't know what the game's going to
do. Yeah.
I mean, there's a guy in a patrol tower facing the opposite direction. I'm like, it's dark out. The light's not on me. And I'm like at the base of the tower and he saw me somehow. And I'm like, what? So, of course, he alerts the entire base. This was cool, though. They threw a grenade up into the tower where I was. It knocked me down. It actually blew up the tower. The tower was gone. I didn't know that was a thing in this game.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But you can also restore from a checkpoint, too. So it's not super frustrating.
That's another pain point I have with this game. I hate open world games that don't let you save anywhere.
Oh, really?
Only for the purpose that, I mean, especially with me, I might have to go take care of a baby real quick.
But it auto-saves enough.
Yeah, it's just any game that auto-saves, I'm always worried, where was the last auto-save?
I think with the auto-saving combined with the sleep feature,
that's I think so, too. It's just, it's the whole don't use your weapons in Mega Man thing.
I think every open world game's like that now. An open world game.
Like Skyrim and like that.
I think Grand Theft Auto actually did have a save button.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a prime example. That drove me nuts about Grand Theft Auto. Go back to your hangout to save. It's on the other side of the city.
That wasn't a thing in 5.
I need to leave.
In 5, it was a button on your cell phone.
That's good.
So Metal Gear works great as a open world game.
Again, I've never played Peace Walker. I haven't even touched it, in fact.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think I'm missing out much. I think I got the gist.
No, Peace Walker was kind of weird because it really played more like the PlayStation 2 games, but it came out sort of post 4. Because remember, it was a PSP game.
Yeah, that's why I didn't play it.
But the PSP wasn't quite as good as a PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
And it was weird because there was portable. It was they made a lot of Metal Gear games on PSP.
Well, there was the acid games.
And they're like, well, we'll just make a little card game. That's what we can do. And then they made portable ops, which was it was bite-sized Metal Gear missions. This kind of works. That cute. Then they just made a full-on game, and it was still very mission-based. You know what? It was kind of it took a lot from Monster Hunter of all things.
Yeah, that's what people said. Yeah,
and it was actually designed around multiplayer, which was maybe hurt it because no one ever, at least here, no one really played multiplayer on it.
So I didn't know three of the people who had a Vita besides you.
Yeah.
Or a PSP.
Right. So, but I mean, you know, I think the Mother Base stuff works nice. And it was the same thing where you recovered soldiers with the Fulton thing.
Right. Well, I mean, you can certainly see that game's influence here. The episodic breakup of everything. There's credits after every episode and stuff. It's kind of silly, but kind of cool.
Yeah. There actually is a lot. And definitely just it takes place pretty shortly after. Well, Ground Zeroes, the prequel, takes place a year after Peace Walker. And they reference the events of it a lot.
So right.
It's not just a cute little side game.
No, no, no. But I feel like they've done a good enough job explaining what happened in Peace
Walker.
I
mean, I haven't played the HD version of it. Maybe that makes it nicer. But it might be kind of hard to play Peace Walker now.
Well, that's if I was going to do it. It would be the HD version on Vita, probably, where I'd get.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, it was a PSP game.
Honestly, I'm surprised that was never a PlayStation Plus game, leading up to the launch of this.
They made the Ground Zeroes one. Yeah. So
would have been smart.
The Metal Gear mean anything to you before Solid came out? I don't think we
not
had...
Not a thing. I don't even think I was aware of it.
I don't think... I wasn't aware of the original NES either. Mm-hmm. We played it because we were kids when the NES was a thing. We didn't play it.
But for a lot of people, I think the original Metal Gear Solid was the first time when you were like, oh... This is like a movie. That was always that was always the promise of video games, right? That someday it's gonna be like playing a movie. And we never really quite got there. And '98 was the year we got Half-Life, which was amazing, but Metal Gear was, I think, the first game where the acting mattered. The story,
even the fact that it was all voice acted, was a big deal for a console game. Anyways, that was a big deal.
Their mouths didn't even move in that game.
No, not
but
yet.
It didn't matter.
Oh, the codec calls they did because there's just pictures.
Well, they were just 2D sprites.
Yeah,
But yeah, like, I mean, like, you know, the way the story progressed, the way that it integrated gameplay into story elements, like, especially the...
there were character arcs.
Yeah. Like, all of that was like, oh.
It was stuff that was unusual, especially for an action game. Like, you would have that on, like, PC adventure games or PC, like, role-playing games. Right.
But then, when you break down the gameplay itself... Not all that different from the original NES game.
No, in fact, if you compare it specifically to Metal Gear 2, which only came out in Japan for that MSX computer system, basically the same gameplay.
Yeah.
It's top-down 2D sprites. There's the cone view of vision that you're avoiding. Very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked very, very similarly. But yeah, it's funny because, that was crazy in 98 because that was right when Nintendo 64 had Ocarina of Time. And I feel like... One of the things that helped keep PlayStation like from really falling behind, and especially were keeping its lead, was the fact that they just
wrapped Metal Gear Solid. They didn't have an answer to Zelda.
They immediately had an answer, and yeah. I remember how crazy it was. Those two games, because I remember there's that issue of EGM where those two games both got like reviewed in the same issue because they both came out around the same time.
Yeah,
and it was like both reviews. Like, this is one of the greatest games of all time. Sure, is a crazy time to be a gamer.
Yeah, right.
And it's like you immediately knew that Metal Gear Solid was very important because when you played it, yeah, there just really wasn't anything quite like that.
No,
it was very. It was different. You know, it was a game again of like this. Just, like, weird things. Like, it had, like, real music in it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like
Harry Gregg... I always screw up his name. Harry Gregson Williams
did
or whatever.
Did he jump in until 2? I forget.
Oh, maybe you're right.
But I mean, like at the end, like, they actually... Like, I remember the credits. First off, it had, like, movie-style credits.
Yeah, opening credits during
gameplay. And they played, like, an actual song. And, like, they would have, like, that full motion video that they would play during then. It was, like, it was oddly effective and stuff like that. It was just a cool game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super fun.
Yeah. And so... With Phantom Pain, what I like is, because it's playing in that kind of milieu created by Metal Gear Solid 3, like, that's helping me a lot, because 2 got batshit goofy. We can all accept that, right?
I tell you, no. I tell you what, everybody loves 2 now. That's the problem.
We have an hour video out.
That's the problem. That's why that video wasn't received more because it came out
upsetting people.
It came out right when like everyone turned their opinion on. Everyone loves Metal Gear Solid 2. They really latch on to the idea of it being like.
We played it and we recorded it, and it's just a kind of a boring game.
Everybody really latched on to the idea.
All the environments look the same.
I mean, I can kind of understand.
No, I
some
don't.
Things.
The tanker mission in that game is fantastic. Okay, right. Brilliant stuff.
Why?
And it doesn't even have anything to do with Ryan himself, although he sucks. When you're on the big shell, it's a brown, flat-shaded environment the whole damn time. Every room looks exactly the same.
It's very
industrial. There are two struts that are a mirror of each other. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so boring, and you don't do anything.
But I think the gameplay was really good in the sort of continuation of Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah, but it was...
Adding in that first person view was a new thing at the time.
But it was
really
the gameplay
cool.
Without the motivation. You were just... You may as well have been playing the VR mission.
I mean, there was kind of a motivation, and the motivation was basically to see more Solid Snake.
Well, as we said,
there's motivation
in that video. The most interesting part of that game is when you're defusing the bombs, because you're actually like
just
looking for hidden objectives.
You're actually playing the game for a while,
and a character who actually had an arc, but just dies at the end of that arc.
Look,
like
I'm just
involved.
Saying,
this is
Fortune and Fat Boss aren't quite as memorable as Vulcan Raven or Sniper Wolf.
Right. Right. But
Solid Snake is no Liquid Snake.
And then 4 like pulled it back a little bit, but it still got because it had kind of metal in the weirdness left from 2.
4 was very good in that it, and I think 4 is one of the best endings of a game. It's very satisfying. And it does a very good job of tying 2 and 3 together and ending the series. And there was a lot of cutscenes. Make no mistake, like it was a cutscene heavy game.
Yeah.
Like as much as anything, but the gameplay of it was in the sort of like. Camouflage aspect to the stealth was really neat.
The real time, like switch.
Right, like you just push a button and you camouflage immediately at your surroundings.
But 3
is my favorite.
3 is the best one because it was more grounded. I mean, it still had like magic bullshit. Like there was a guy who controlled bees.
Yeah.
Was that ever explained?
No.
He just controlled bees.
And like the main bad guy had lightning powers.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
You know, whatever.
You know what? Whatever. Yeah, but the plot was relatively straightforward. It made sense.
And there's still, like, intrigue and, you know, like, doubles, crossings and stuff like that. Yeah, no, 3 is the best one because, you know, it tied into things, but in a more of an ambiguous way. And, Plus, the systems of it were just really cool. The whole make, like, the whole, you didn't really have, like, a normal health bar. It was about eating and keeping yourself healthy. You had to, like, heal your injuries, which is, like, another big reason to play stealthy, because if you get shot, you're going to have to, like, take that bullet out later.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and, yeah, it just had so many cool moments and awesome boss fights, and, you know, everyone talks about the end, that ridiculous sniping boss fight. That's one thing I haven't really done yet, and, Grand Theft Auto, I'm kind of interested to see his boss fights, because the series has been known for really good boss fights.
I heard there's one that's really bullshit.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. I don't
know. People get mad at it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I had this thought, because I got like my physical copy of the game. It came with like a nice actually map insert. I was like, ooh, what if this does? What if it's like the first Metal Gear though, where you need like a code off the back of the game, and people bought it digitally, and they're screwed. And they're in trouble.
And then they're going to have to go on GameFAQs and just get the answer like everyone who rented the game back in the day did.
But, no, I did like three most. Granted, I didn't play it until Subsistence, because I actually thought it looked bad the first time they showed it. I don't know why. I was very against Snake Eater first. Maybe because 2 left a bad taste kind of in my mouth. 2
left a bad taste in my mouth. The original trailer was real dumb, where some guy like just took Snake's motorcycle and yelled at him, and he just stood there.
Yeah, and then he made like off a Metal Gear joke.
And then they did that other one where he was like eating a snake, but being oddly vampiric about it.
Yeah, he was being like a little weird about eating that snake.
Yeah, and it's like, what? I don't know. Yeah, not got more weird bullshit.
Got kind
of
weird.
Gotta say too, I feel like on a lot of the prologue in Phantom Pain, a lot of Snake's problems would have been solved if he just kind of didn't stand around so much.
Hey, he was like tired. Yeah. That's his first time walking in 9 years.
Yeah, but once I got camera control back, I could run all I wanted.
His drugs kicked in.
Oh, okay.
The drugs.
I do like the how it especially in the cutscenes, whenever the camera's doing stuff, it feels very much like there's a camera operator. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't feel like a floating video game camera, which is kind of cool.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you touched any online? Doesn't even let me connect.
No, yeah, they have some problems. I mean, I don't see myself doing that until I beat the game.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sure it'll be okay, but I mean, I played Metal Gear Online a little bit with Subsistence and then a little bit on 4. You know, it's always like a fun distraction, but it's never like, this is like, you know, Titanfall or Call of Duty. Yeah. It's almost more, not maybe even less than Uncharted, but it's like something you play a little bit. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know. So yeah, I'm excited to play a lot more Metal Gear 5. I think it's gonna end up being one of the best entries in the series.
Oh, I think so too. It's off to a good start.
Yeah, you can already kind of tell.
The public opinion of it is high.
Yeah, people seem to really be digging it. And I think it makes a lot of nice compromises with some of the complaints. It seems a lot less talky.
Yeah.
And I think the open world stuff is working very well. And it'll be kind of cool to see how this game's gonna tie into like the past games and the games that come after, which is basically all the, you know, Metal Gear Solid 1 and the Metal Gear games. And you already kind of, even like, you know, without saying much, you already get the notion of like how like Solid, like
how the heel turn happens.
Yeah, like he's becoming a less like pure, he's definitely becoming a much more morally gray character already, which is interesting. So yeah, all right. So just special zone time. I beat Witcher 3.
That's cool.
Yeah, I felt good. Man, that game...
Do you know how many hours you put into it?
I can't, like, find where it says. It had to...
There is a timer in the system somewhere, although I could be wrong. I forget, like, there might be a thing where it keeps track of time when it's suspended. But I don't know if they fixed
it
that.
It had to be, like, over 100 hours easily or so. And usually, like, I always, like, people always say a game's over 100 hours, and I call bullshit. This game was probably over 100 hours. It was pretty long.
It's pretty
long. And it was, like, and that was, like, towards the second half of me, like, really, like, not doing that many second quests anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, the first half, I would do all of them. Then I was like, okay, let's beat this thing.
Yeah.
Right. But, no, it was really cool. And it did, you know, there's multiple endings, but none of them are like, there's one that's like the hardest ending, so people think it's the quote-unquote best ending, but they're all satisfying endings.
Yeah.
I liked the ending I got.
That's good.
And so forth and all that. And then again, there's like the separate endings too, with like just like some of the other side quests you did or didn't do, and like what comes from those decisions, like you always have in these kind of games. But no, it was super fun, and you know, I was glad to kind of beat it. It did have like a lot of kind of open. It was like so ambitious. It had a lot of open world wonkiness, sometimes where like his like beard would like not be there sometimes when a scene changes angles that it would like pop in. So there's like pop in.
I saw that video so where like your horse was just running into a mountain.
Yeah, it looked kind of interesting. And it always had weird problems where if you resume that game from a sleep state, like you wouldn't be able to save again and the performance would.
They fixed that.
No, they didn't.
I thought they did.
I thought they didn't and I had the problem again. Yeah, weird. At one point I lost a decent amount of stuff. I had to like go back and do something. It was annoying. But no, it was a super fun. I definitely think it was better than Dragon. I think it's the best Western RPG on one of the new systems right now.
But it was made in Eastern Europe.
That's.
Is that West? I don't know.
I guess.
I like how the definition is like China, Japan are East, and everything else is West.
See, politically, I think that's Eastern, but game development wise, that's West. Game development wise, anything that's like.
Not
West
Asian.
Of China is. Yeah, that's good.
But not including Russia.
Russia doesn't make games, do they? They make Metro.
They made Metro.
I mean, Metro. That's a Western game.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's Russian.
Tetris, yeah. Tetris. That's a Russian game. So, yeah, I was very, very proud of myself for beating a thing. Anything else you want to talk about? You're excited about all these Star Wars toys.
Well, that Star Wars toy that's relevant is Disney Infinity.
Oh, yeah, I actually played that with you.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get a full episode out of it because you're not playing enough of it. But it's super rad. So, obviously, the big hook is Star Wars, which to me is like, yay! But they've finally done enough work on the combat system, especially with, like, the new Star Wars characters, where there's enough, like, kind of combos and counters and diversity to it that it's, like, a semi-deep action game. Let me put it this way. Deep enough for me. Not where there's, like, a combo list, like, Bayonetta, Dante style, where I gotta, like, you know, there's a million ways to kill a guy. There's, like, four or five good combos. They're all situational. They all do kind of neat things. You don't really need to do them, though, but they're, like, useful enough. So I did the Twilight of the Republic playset stories, story missions done. You and I played through the Toy Box Takeover, which I got for free for pre-ordering, but it'll be released at the end of the month for
$20. I haven't played the game since 1.0, and I definitely saw a lot of improvements, especially like the skill trees and stuff like that. It was fun.
Yeah, everything about it's a blast. They've really got that nailed down.
It still has the problem with me where it doesn't quite feel like a full-on game. I still know that I'm kind of playing like a makeshift game of some kind.
Well, again, the thing you were playing, the Toy Box Takeover.
But the Star Wars thing is maybe a bit more.
Yeah, because though the what do they call them? Toy Box expansions. They're kind of something that skirts the line between what you yourself could make in the Toy Box and what only the developers can do. Because they can have like voiced cutscenes and things like that. But more or less, the gameplay section of those you could replicate pretty easily in the Toy Box. The actual playsets themselves, especially like the new Star Wars one, it feels like playing a licensed Star Wars video.
I really want to try out the the original series.
Yeah, and I'll be able to get that at the end of September.
And I want to try out that Inside Out one, actually, which
Chris got it. It's supposed to be a pretty good platformer. It goes between 3D and 2D.
So that I need to check out.
Yeah, but it's super rad. It's just, I mean, when we were playing it, like, you know, when you die, you're if you're playing in co-op, someone can come revive you, but you can just swap figures. So we're, like, going between, like, Incredible and Anakin Skywalker and Jack Skellington and Buzz Lightyear and Mickey Mouse. And it's just like, this is so fun.
Yeah, it's definitely neat. I bought my own Donald Duck just because you didn't have one. I'm like, if I play again, I freaking want Donald Duck.
There you go.
And he's a nice looking figure.
Yeah. Oh, all the figures in that game look so nice.
They do.
They're really, really cool. I love it. It's amazing that they came up with a single art style that applies to all this stuff, and it works.
What amazes me is that it basically just looks like the art style of these Star Wars cartoon shows already anyway.
Yeah, it's not a very far departure for them, so that kind of worked out in their favor.
Like Han Solo, it's like a stylized Han Solo, but it's like that Yoda, and it's like, that's the Clone Wars Yoda,
Right, like you know that. But it's funny, because, I mean, they established that style before Disney even bought Star Wars.
Right.
So it's not like they did that with that in mind or anything. Right. It just kind of worked out.
All right, anything else?
Maybe they stole it.
They stole it. They steal it.
Also, I'm trying really hard not to tell myself to go to Target at midnight and buy a BB-8.
Dude, you need to still get Super Mario Maker, which everybody loves.
I know. I'll tell you what. If I hadn't played it at Best Buy yesterday for literally 5 minutes, which is enough to be like, I need to get this. Like, I would be telling myself, like, I'll just play Mike's copy and get a BB-8. No. Yeah, but we did. I did play it literally for 5 minutes at a Best Buy. I made, like, the dumbest, easiest, quick level ever just to mess with it. I'm like, this is incredible. I need this in
my
life.
It's going to be so much fun.
Stick it in my veins.
If that's going to be
that will probably be next week's episode.
When's
that come out? Oh, wait, does it
11th,
come out?
That'll be the week after, maybe.
Yeah, because it comes out a week tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, the 11th. The 11th of September, as they keep saying.
Yeah, 11th of September.
Nothing weird happened on this day. Yeah, we'll think of something else for next week's episode, don't worry.
Yeah, it'll be something cool.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Explain Bro podcast, everybody. You can find more of us at ebpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and go to the iTunes Music Store, find all of our old episodes, and leave us a review. We always appreciate it. All right, we'll see you next week right here on the Explain Bro podcast.
Bye-bye.